You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 12th of January, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. I'm joined once again by the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today in 2018 tonight?
I'm doing okay, yeah. I've been actually researching in depth, as you know, and some little gems have come to light.
They certainly have. I'm very privileged to say I've just seen the preview edition of episode 10 of your new series and very impressed. I was indeed very, very impressed with it. I think this is going to be
takes a lot to impress you, Tom.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of your very best when it finally gets made public. I know the listeners are really going to enjoy it because it covers all of our favourite stuff. You've got National Socialists in there, you've got the Second World War in there, you've got fighting against communists, and you've got the Catholic Church, and you've dug up some really surprising information on the Catholic Church
hidden information.
Yeah, I mean, basically what you've shown in this is that fascism was explicitly based upon Christian principles and endorsed and helped by the Catholic Church right from the very beginning. And I don't think anyone's going to be able to argue against that. And you've got this as well. I've taken down some notes from the episode, and then we can break it down and discuss it. And then people can use that as an accompaniment to it when they actually watch it. But first off, the speaking voice at the beginning, you've got somebody that's obviously studied National Socialism, that's talking, giving a history right of the very beginning of National Socialism. And he comes up with, first of all, he just sums things up, and then he comes up with some surprising information on the swastika. But at the start, he talks about conditions in Munich in 1920. And what were the conditions at the time, and what was your reasoning for portraying that at the beginning of the episode?
Well, the reason was because right about that time, obviously, the Communist Revolution after World War One had taken place, or was taking place, and this group of nationalists met in Munich under the leadership of Adolf Hitler, who, as Dr. Petito says, he knocked him into shape. And he goes on to explain about, I've always said it, as you know what I mean, like, the swastika, which Adolf Hitler chose to design, was Christian, and he goes on to explain just exactly why it's Christian, which I thought was a good find. His actual documentary is about 40 minutes long, and that's just a small part, so I've got some more to look into as well.
Well, he sounds fascinating. I've heard some of him before, and I know that he did have a lot of work out there, but there's not much available, so I think he did really well to get hold of that. But also to show the conditions in Munich at the time, because later on in the episode, you're showing talking about the Spanish Civil War, and Hitler's giving a speech, and he's saying our people went over there because they knew what it was going to be like with the Soviets. They knew what was going to happen, and they knew what was going to happen because they'd seen it already. They'd seen it. They'd seen it in Munich after the end of the First World War, when the Soviets tried to take over in Germany. So they knew what was happening. And he also mentions Hitler's Iron Cross, and that's something that people that don't know much about National Socialism, they don't know that Hitler was highly decorated, or they think that he was just given his medals once he'd actually been made Führer, as if he was given that or awarded himself that. So what was the Iron Cross for? And he had some other ones as well, didn't he?
Well, I covered this in The Greatest Story Never Told, and the main thesis behind The Greatest Story Never Told was to counteract what I was taught in school. Obviously, I knew different because I'd been taught at home, but things used to stand out. And that was one of the things what stood out, was the fact that whenever it was mentioned that Adolf Hitler had won these medals and was an obvious war hero, I can always remember that the history teacher saying, playing it all down and saying that they kind of handed these out like confetti. And that never left me. And that's one reason why I did put it in the documentary. He won a first class Iron Cross, which is the highest. He also won a second class Iron Cross, and he won, I think, at least four other medals for bravery. So this is a guy who is, you know, without doubt a war hero. But, you know, like I say, it was played down. And whenever I got a chance, especially in the first documentary, I made it quite plain that he was a war hero and a proud nationalist.
Well, you volunteered for one of the most dangerous jobs there is, being the mail boy.
Well, they played that down as well, the runner. I mean, I used to get messages on YouTube, people saying, oh, he had an easy job, that type of thing. But that runner, you know, is one of the most dangerous jobs you can get, and he actually loved it.
You can just imagine him, can't you, running to the front with the mail for everyone, dodging the bullets on the way. And you can imagine they would have been really pleased to see him as well. You know, they would have been really joyful to get letters from back home. Yeah, he was doing a job there that was for the benefit of everybody else and a huge amount of risk to himself as the individual to bring joy to his compatriots that were out there fighting. And just shows you how brave he was.
Yeah, well, plus the fact that when he got injured, like most people get injured, I make the most of this, like, but he wanted to get back out there as soon as possible, which he did.
Yeah, you learn when you actually start learning about the man, it's so
incredible.
Diametrically opposite to what we've been taught, isn't it?
I mean, just unreal from what I was taught anyway at school.
Moving on to when he describes the swastika. Now, this bit's really interesting. Dr. Petito, I think his name is, and he says that the swastika was deliberately chosen because it was representative of the cross that Christ was crucified on. And now I would say that we know that Adolf Hitler saw the swastika when he was young, and it was at the abbey that he was educated at. And that cross there, that swastika, was representative of the cross that Christ was crucified on. And that was the first one that Adolf Hitler saw. So, yes, the swastika that he chose would have been representative, and that would have been one of the reasons why he chose it. And he also says that the arm symbolizes a life. So then you've got four arms there, but the arms are turning. So they're constantly turning, which is a symbolism of eternal life. And they're turning towards the right, as Christ said, that his sheep will go to his right hand and the goats will go to the left into the fire. And I thought that was particularly interesting, not just because it explains the swastika, but also because it calls to mind a verse, quite a famous verse, about the sheep going to the right and the goats going to the left. And what a lot of people don't realize is that that's not talking about individual sheep or goats. That's talking about nations. And it comes from Matthew 25. And I'll just read these out, and then I'll pass it back over to you for some comment, Dennis. It is Matthew 25. It says, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations. And he shall separate them, one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye accursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels, and these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. I think that's a very important verse that often gets misinterpreted as talking about individuals and naughty behavior, but it's saying there are separate nations. There are nations which come from God, and there are nations which come from the devil. And I would say that the white race is obviously the nations that come from God, and one of the nations that clearly come from the devil are the Jews.
Yeah, and Babylon, yeah.
Definitely.
That's right, yeah. I just thought it quite poignant, because the reason I did this episode, to be quite honest, is that not only do I get flack from pagans, but even Christians, Pastor Stephen Anderson did a YouTube video on Hitler not being Christian. And then a couple of weeks back, I think I mentioned that the Diamond Brothers thought my work was satanic, because I was saying Hitler was a Christian. And my answer to that was, I can remember when the Vatican was helping National Socialists out of Europe and to safety, unlike some people. And so I just felt that this, you know, another comment this week where from a pagan, and he said, I had no evidence at all that Hitler was a Christian. So I just thought, I'm gonna do what I can now just to emphasize just what this holy war was all about and who was who.
Well, you've done a really good job with it. It starts with that. It continues right the way throughout it. I'll just point out something else about the swastika. I saw the other day, I heard that it's the time for the end of the cross, and the cross has been here for 2,000 years. The cross has been here for 5,000 years. The cross has been here since the first time that white people carved an image onto a bit of wood and then onto a bit of rock. The cross is a symbol that has always followed us around, and the same for the swastika. The swastika is a stylized cross. It's a symbol for the same thing. It's a symbol for life itself, and it's an Aryan symbol. So the fact that Christianity uses the cross is a continuity with everything that went on before. It wasn't something new. And the idea with Christ in the middle of it, that again, that's an old symbol with man in the middle with the four directions around him. And when you look at the ancient rune for life, which is it's a straight line with two lines going at the top of it, as if it's a man with arms outstretched, it's exactly the same as Christ on the crucifix. And it's a symbol for eternal life. So their symbol, the old rune for life is actually Christ dying on the cross, eternal life. And this is a rune from before Christianity. Now, all these things are linked in together because there are heritage, white people's heritage. And Hitler knew this. This is why he used the swastika, because it was the white man's heritage. And it was a Christian symbol as well. It wasn't anti-Christian. Yeah. Do you want to add anything to that?
I've always said that this was a Christian feature, and he designed it to put the fear of God into the communists, because the National Socialists didn't have a flag, and this was perfect for what he wanted. And he designed it as a man of art, and it's probably one of the most recognizable flags the world's ever seen. And the reason it's banned is, like I said a while back, that I watched a documentary and I still can't get my hands on it, where a Jew and a Hindu lady was walking around India looking at certain things, and one of the things that they looked at was a Hindu temple. And as they walked towards that temple, they must have been about 30, 40 yards away, the Jew started to sweat. And the reason why he was sweating is when you got up to the door of the temple, it was covered in little swastikas. Anyway, he managed to gather his composure, and the Hindu lady took him into the temple. But then as soon as he went into the temple, there was a big, big, big red swastika on the floor, which nearly flattened him, and he had to get out for oxygen. It's something, this is a true story. It's something that the Jews wanted banning, even in India they tried. But they certainly got it banned in Europe, along with the Roman salute. But the swastika itself was a good luck charm for not only the Germans, the Boy Scouts in England and in America had medals with a swastika on. So, you know, it's been taken from us, because it is, you know, there's a certain life in that, and it's a life energy that the Jews don't particularly want to live quite near.
That's a symbol for purity as well. The opposite of the communist flag with the hammer and sickle. And he wants to show the opposite of that. And communism was trying to wipe out Christianity. So this is a symbol of the forces that communism was trying to wipe out. It's clearly a Christian symbol. And you've got more. Say, straight after that, you've got Christopher Hitchens. Now, Christopher Hitchens is no friend to National Socialism, is he?
At all. No, not at all.
Do you want to say a few things about Christopher Hitchens, or shall I say shall I quote some of what he said?
Well, no, you can carry on. You can quote him.
Well, he says, first off, he says that fascism was the right wing of the Catholic Church. He says you cannot call National Socialism secular at all. 50% of the Waffen-SS were practicing Catholics. Joseph Goebbels was the only Catholic that was excommunicated, and that was for marrying a Protestant. And he says that the Catholic Church continued to support National Socialism all while they were in power. He says Darwinism was not taught in Germany. Darwin, Einstein and Freud were all completely despised. All the oaths to the Führer, that's by everyone in office, had to take an oath to Almighty God. And don't forget that in Britain at this time, they'd taken all oaths that had any reference to the Christian Bible had been taken out so that Jews could join. And yet all the oaths in Germany were said to Almighty God to honour the Führer. The belt buckles all said God with us, which is the same as Israel, God with us, God with man. That's what the word Israel means, God with us, God with man. And the first treaty that the National Socialists actually made was with the Vatican. And this is all from Christopher Hitchens, of all people. And I thought it was fascinating what he came out with.
Yeah, well, he should know, because he's a religious critic, if you like. He does mention Darwin and a couple of others. But I found, I use a particular photo, I don't know if you've noticed it, where he's got his finger on his lips. Now, that has been passed around, I think Obama's done it and a couple of others. And the general consensus is that it's to keep a secret, which is not really true. This is a real deep Masonic symbol of Horus. And any statue of Horus you'll come across, you'll probably find he's got his fingers on his lips. So I believe that although he claimed to be an atheist, and by doing that one particular finger over the lips, he's into the mystery teachings.
Who's that, Darwin or Hitchens?
Darwin.
Darwin. Yeah, I could believe that. I mean, he was quite up in the establishment, wasn't he? He was bound to have been involved in Freemasonry. They certainly made use of him. I heard people say he was an atheist, but he was sort of before the time that atheism became acceptable. I'm not sure. I guess people nowadays, like the atheists, like to claim him as one of their own, but I never would have thought.
Yeah, they do. And they like to say that he was involved with the Nazis, which Christopher Hitchens rightly says it's false.
Well, yeah, they were quite against Darwin. This is a surprising thing to me as well, Dennis, that you get evolutionists and Darwinists trying to claim National Socialism. Just because you're talking about eugenics, which is breeding, doesn't mean that you're endorsing the theory of evolution.
Even eugenics was a British conception. Churchill was at the very first meeting in London for the first eugenics meeting. And although it's been tainted, if you like, the way they've corrupted it with Nazism and eugenics, it never actually stops. I mean, there was a state in America who was fined quite considerably during the 70s for carrying it out. It's not a German thing.
No, not at all. America was doing it a lot more than Germany. But the Germans were never trying to change one species into another species. All they were doing was trying to, they called it racial hygiene. Yeah, racial hygiene. If you look at animal husbandry, you try to breed the best sheep, the best cows, and you have breeds, and you try to keep pedigree with dogs, and it's just applying the same thing to human beings. There's nothing about changing from one species into another, which is what evolution is all about. So there was no link between National Socialism and Darwinism. And quite clearly, they were going to be against Freud and Einstein because they were both Jews.
Well, also, I think that evolution is a tool to kill God. I think it's a Masonic tool, just like, the space program and all this kind of carry on, which are trying to make out. I think we talked about it the other week, didn't we, that we're not really anything more than just a piece of a meat on a planet.
Yeah, atheism follows on from the theory of evolution, doesn't it?
That's right.
First of all, you have to get rid of the instinct that we all have from children that there is a God, because it's so obvious someone created your parents and not just your grandparents. And that is so obvious. So first of all, they have to get rid of that. And then once that's been got rid of, then you'll believe in anything, and you'll believe in atheism. Once you think that we just evolved from monkeys,
and the monkeys evolved from swine, animals, didn't it?
Yeah, it still doesn't account for the prime mover.
First take us down, lift us up.
Yeah, well, that's it. And the protocols talk about it as well, about how they're going to promote Darwinism.
Exactly.
Because it serves their cause. Hitler was well aware of the protocols. There's no support for Darwinism. I think Hitchens is right here with everything that he says. I mean, what was his point in saying it? Was it was to attack the church, was it?
Well, it was in two parts, actually. One was when he was slightly younger. That was the first part where I think he was having a kind of a debate, and this is why I was saying you can't call it secular, there's no way. And he, as you said, he mentioned certain quotes of what Hitler was linked to the Catholic Church. Like, for instance, they celebrated his birthday every year on his birthday on that day. And then I added, of course, right at the very end that when he died, they gave him a requiem mass throughout the churches in Germany. And this isn't sounding like a pagan at all. This is sounding like his mother was a devout Catholic. His parents were Catholic. His wife was Catholic. His wife's family was Catholic. This is a Catholic and a Christian at that time, a Catholic church which wasn't under Freemasonry or the Rothschilds for that period. And that's another thing what a lot of people get mixed up about, because they get certain things thrown at them and people don't realise that during that time in Europe, it was free of Freemasonry, and it's only previous and after that some of these things happen, negative things for the church. So, but people, if you don't know it, then you just think it's like that all the time.
Well, this requiem mass, would that have been ordered by the church or by the state?
The church. I think it's a Cardinal Bottrom, I think it was, who was the leader of the Catholic Church in Germany, who ordered the churches to give him a requiem mass. And a requiem mass, for those people who don't know, is a means of passing, onto the dead tranquility and peacefulness.
So that would only be done for very, very special people, and it would have to be only be done with the blessing of the Pope, I guess, or the higher ups in the church.
Well, it certainly would never have been done for a pagan, that's for sure.
No. I just think it's quite obvious from this stuff that you've dug up that there was open support from the Pope for national
Well,
socialism.
I'm not asking people to be Christian all of a sudden. All I'm saying is if people don't understand that World War II was a war of Christianity against the Jews via communism, via Freemasonry, they will never, ever understand World War II. And the reason that they're covering up these things is because the killing of Christianity continues. And if you look at the church, I think a priest talks at one point saying about, how Stalin destroyed the church, in Catholic Church in Russia, and if the same forces outside of Russia got the chance and took power, they would do the same. Voila, look at the EU.
Yeah, it's quite clear that, that was the goal of the Soviet, was to destroy the churches and destroy the priests. And later on, you talk about a resistance that was formed from the priests. But before we get to that, there's a speech, and it's Adolf Hitler talking, and he explains that they are fighting against propaganda from outside of Germany that is saying that Germany is anti-Christian, and he's saying that some priests have been used as subversives, and these priests never spoke out against the slaughter of the priests in Russia. He talks about how National Socialists went to fight for Franco, specifically to save the priests from the Bolsheviks, because they knew the danger that Spain was in. They could see what had happened to Germany in the 20s, and they knew what was happening to the priests. And he was saying that they support the church, and the church is happy with National Socialism and supports National Socialism. And this is all black propaganda that's coming from outside of Germany. And that propaganda has continued today, hasn't it, in Hollywood?
Exactly. It's like you'll probably find on YouTube sometimes, oh, Hitler killed the Jews, he killed the Gypsies, he killed the Catholics, and on and on and on. And I've always said, he's going to kill the Catholics, he's going to kill his own family. But obviously this is propaganda, and I touched on it in Communism by the Back Door, where there were people allowed into the country to check the camps where these communists, these Jews weren't being mistreated. You know, the communists who were causing problems were locked up, and some of these priests were left wing, as we see what's in charge of the Vatican today, which he wouldn't put up with because they would criticise the state and the leaders, and he said that anybody who's not getting on with their own work with the Lord, and instead criticising the state, will be treated like any other person in Germany and be punished. Now, some of these people like Roosevelt, etc., jumped on the bandwagon and saying that, oh, you know, he's persecuting the priests. What Hitler was saying, I never quite heard you when the Bolsheviks were killing the priests, chopping them up in pieces, or in Spain, where, you know, priests and nuns were set on fire. Where were your voices then? This is obviously political. You're obviously upset over a few priests who are the enemy of the state.
Well, this is the thing, because we often hear the allegation that Hitler put all these Catholics in the camps as well. And it's obviously untrue. It was subversives that were put in the camp. It was communists and people that were against the state. And we see the same thing happening today over in India. There are CIA operations that operate as evangelical churches that have had to be shut down. It's the same in Iran. CIA operations operating as evangelical churches. Same in China. It's a very common front that these intelligence operatives use is a modern day evangelical church. And I dare say it was no different back then. And they had subversives that were operating, pretending to be priests, but who were really just there to subvert the nation. It's such a common thing today. Why we don't imagine that it was happening back then, I guess people just don't think that far.
No, they probably don't.
That is what it was.
But like I said, there were some real priests who were actually left-wing. Probably Jesuits, probably Jews, who infiltrated after World War One. Because you've got to remember, after World War One, the Rothschilds took control of the Vatican and everything else.
I mean, what they worked out to do after the war was, instead of wiping out the church, was just replace all the priests in the church with left-wing communists and pedophiles.
Well, after World War Two, yeah. Yeah, that's what they've done.
World War II, sorry, not World War One. But that's the only reason why they haven't worked on wiping out the church today, is because they've just subverted it from within.
Well, they don't want 1 billion Catholics to suddenly be awakened to the fact that, you know, they're being wiped out or being led down the road into the Church of Lucifer. So they do things nice and slow, and just one day you wake up and, like communism, you know, it's just appeared. It's like a creeping one of these horror films where the mud's creeping up on you, and one day you can't move.
Well, back then, the priests, I guess they must have all been pretty similar to Bishop Williamson is today, but the younger ones that had the physical bodies and the health, they all got together and they formed a resistance movement. And this is the first I've ever heard of them. The Intermarion, which is between the seas. And it was right the way across Europe to hold back Bolshevism. They were devoted to it. These priests that were battling basically against the Soviets. And this is the first I've heard of them.
It was a Catholic wall right across Europe.
And they call it, that's why it was called From Sea to Sea, wasn't it? Because it was right the way across.
Yeah, and it's something that I hadn't heard of. Obviously, I wasn't surprised when I did hear about it, because as this particular priest goes on to explain, Stalin was pretty ruthless with the Catholic Church in the Soviet Union.
So they had to fight against it. I mean, later on in the program, you're also talking about these Croatian priests and the monasteries and the monks, and they're all out there fighting. They're all out there fighting the war against the Soviets, trying to keep them out of Europe.
I bet. Well, the thing is that they learn from the Spanish Revolution, because obviously the Franciscan monks in Spain were taking up arms against the communists. They had to, because otherwise they'd have just been wiped out. I mean, there were plenty of priests and nuns killed in the Spanish Revolution. And so, obviously, you know, it's the thing to do. And these Franciscan monks took up arms, and they even give the monasteries over as military bases to the Ustasha.
This is one of the things that you've shown with the new series, isn't it? You've been showing that all of this has been about the persecution of the church and going after the priests. So they've seen it happen in Mexico, seen it happen in Spain, seen it happen in Russia, and they've got to stop it from going any further into Europe and breaking its way into Europe. So you've got these priests that were fighting. None of this turn the other cheek, love the enemy.
No, you can't do that. Not with a Bolshevik.
Yeah, none of this crap that we hear today. I mean, this is this is people that really believe in what they're doing. They've got some integrity, and there are people speaking up for them. The Duke of Windsor, as well, who was the former King Edward VIII, and this is after his abdication. Or they say his abdication after he was forced to leave and resign from being king because he wanted to marry a divorcee. He was still speaking up for National Socialism in 1936. And this is what I'm saying.
One or two of the elite did do. Even John Amory, who was, I suppose, the son of an elite, he spoke about not wanting to fight for Stalin and the Jews and went over to Europe to fight for Hitler and Christianity. And, you know, people can have a go at me and say all they want, but, you know, a fact's a fact. And if they want the truth, which is what I like to tell, up to the best of my ability, then they've got to understand that the Jews did declare a holy war. And it's not that hard to understand, because Freemasonry and the Catholic Church have been at war since the foot of the cross.
Well, I also like to point out that Prince Harry, by marrying this Meghan, not only is she black, but she's also a divorcee. So he's basically, you know, just pissing on his ancestor's grave on the Duke of Windsor, who ended up resigning his crown rather than drag the monarchy through disrepute by marrying a divorcee. He resigned from being king. And yet you've got Prince Harry today, who without a care in the world has announced that he's marrying a divorcee.
Now, do you know what I find strange about that? Well, I don't find it strange, but I find there's a significant point to it all, is that his mother was killed, I believe, because she was about to give birth to a Muslim child. And so, you know, there was no way that the royal family were going to have Muslims in the household. But she's Jewish, this Prince Harry's. So even though she's black, it doesn't really matter. She's Jewish, or half Jewish.
Yeah, I've heard she's half Jewish, half black. Doesn't really know what she is, mystery meat sort of thing. But the fact is, she's divorced, and you can't marry someone who's divorced, which is why his ancestor, less than 100 years ago, resigned from being king. That's what I can't get, is the disrespect that he is showing for the royal family by doing that. And nobody has pointed this out. Nobody in the newspapers, none of the talking heads, none of them have even mentioned it. I guess they don't want people to remember the King Edward VIII.
Well, I said about the royal family. I mean, that, again, you know, on the day of you know, when they all celebrated the winning of World War II and all these white faces in the crowd, and Churchill goes out onto the balcony and the royal family goes out onto the balcony. And I'm quite sure they're saying to each other, like, well, it won't be long till we wipe this lot out. Because that's basically what it was. You know, all these white faces have suddenly now changed to, you know, Muslim faces. Or dark skin imported from the Caribbean straight after World War II, with the aim to wipe out the white race, the Kudinov-Galergi plan.
Well, they can't get enough of it, can they? Harry really can't get enough of the Negroes. He's there with a radio station in Brixton this week, dancing around with them. He's got the Obamas are his best friends. He's marrying one. I mean, it's really rubbing the British people's noses in it. But there you go.
Yeah, well, it just backs up everything I've been trying to say for
it does.
3-4 years. You know.
It does. Well, getting back to episode 10, you then bring the Eustache into it. And what can you tell us about the Eustache, Dennis?
These are dyad nationalists who were actually founded. In the documentary, it was founded when the leader, Pavlich, went over to Italy and was training in camps. They were actually founded in Bosnia, I believe. And these were of Croat descent, absolute diehard nationalists who did go over before the war started. They were in camps in Italy. Mussolini took them in because I don't think they were welcome in Yugoslavia at that time, and they trained and prepared to take power one day. Consequently, Hitler gave them that opportunity, and it was the first time in 900 years that Croatia had independence. So you can imagine what they thought of Adolf Hitler.
Well, how did they get to that? Because in the episode, it then moves to a British coup to try and take down the government of Yugoslavia. So how did we get from a British coup trying to take the government down to National Socialists handing the reins of power over to the Ustasha?
Well, I think at that time, Churchill wasn't having any success getting any help from Roosevelt. And so I think he was searching for a soft underbelly where he could attack the Germans. Greece was one place, if you remember, where the British armed, the Greeks, and the Germans had to go down there, and it was quite a tough battle. I think Hitler once said the Greeks were the toughest of the enemies they'd fought up to date. And it was the same, again, in the Balkans. They've always had an influence down there, the British, as an empire. They're going to have influence at some point everywhere, but particularly in Yugoslavia, although that particular government was pro-German, they tried to upset that by turning it over and make it a British ally, which, of course, Hitler then had to send these troops down, and it took all of 10 days to sort out. And after winning that battle, he called in the Ustasha and gave the nationalists control of the new Croatian state.
Once they were in power, again, we had the Vatican getting involved, and it's saying that the Vatican's favourite was Croatia. It was a very Catholic country, and they were extremely anti-Jewish. And you draw a link between the fact that they were even more anti-Jewish than the National Socialists, and they were even more Catholic, if that's possible, than the Germans. And the two are linked together. And you've even got the Archbishop there, the Croatian Archbishop, and he's blessing the Croatian SS members, and they've got the symbols of the Ustasha on the altar. He's got the gun, the dagger, and the grenade on the altar, and he's blessing all these SS members that are about to join. And you've got monks that are then taking part in the military campaign against the Soviets. I mean, where did you find this this film from that's showing this archbishop with the Ustasha?
Well, I mean, I was struggling early on in the week to try and get things moving on part 10. I'd looked at certain other aspects, which I've banked now for further episodes. But this one, I had the Christopher Hitchens thing for about a couple of weeks. I was looking for a link, to back it up. And then suddenly, I put Ratlines, the Vatican Ratlines, and I came up with this documentary. And obviously, this goes back to when, I was being called satanic by some of these Catholics. And I reminded them of the Ratlines and how the National Socialists were saved by the Vatican from a certain death from these communist purges. So, as soon as I saw it, I watched it, and I thought, this is really amazing. This is something that I'd said would have been hidden, but I never dreamt that I'd find it. And certainly, as you said, it's impressive stuff.
Well, look at the way that they call it rat lines. When if it's anything else, they'd call it. If it was Negroes, it'd be an underground railroad, wouldn't it?
Underground railroad. Well, yeah, it's the Americans who came up with that one, I think.
Rat lines, they call it. Well, yeah. And then you go into information about Pavlich, who was the Croatian leader. He even gets a private audience with Pope Pius XII.
On a couple of occasions.
Yeah, has Donald Trump had a private audience with Pope Francis? Do you know?
I have no idea, but it's not the same kind of pope that I'd certainly want an audience with. This is a pope who was against communism. He was against Bolshevism and Freemasonry, everything which the National Socialists were against, and the fascists. And so to me, it's common knowledge that they're going to accept an audience with Pavlich. It's nothing strange to me. But obviously the British and the Americans had the say, but the Vatican didn't move.
Right, I'm just saying, I mean, this proves that the Pope Pius XII, he supported fascism. You've got the Ustasha, who's supposed to be the most anti-Jewish nationalist group of the Second World War, who supposedly was treating them the worst, and he gets private audiences with the Pope. I mean, that shows that there's clear support from Catholicism for fascism. I mean, for the Pope to be linked with him, to have a private audience with him, he must have been a very special person. And, you know, the Pope must have really had a lot of respect for him and for what he was doing in Croatia. He kind of thought he was a bad guy.
Well, that's right. When you think about when Franco, with the help of Hitler and Mussolini, won the Spanish Revolution, the Pope sent a congratulation letter. When you think about the fact that Hitler was given on his birthday a party every year and a Requiem Mass. You know, what I'm trying to say is that this is not a pagan outfit. This is a Christian outfit with intentions of stopping the Bolsheviks, which is why a coalition of Christian nations went into the Soviet Union with Hitler at the head to take down Bolshevism.
Yeah, there's no way there'd have been this level of support from the Vatican for anyone that was promoting Odinism or anything New Age. Not at this time. But I would suggest that it was because of this support that the Catholic Church showed for fascism, which is why the Jews went so hard against it after the war and infiltrated it and forced the Church to come out with Vatican II and change everything. And say that the Jews weren't responsible for the death of Christ any longer, and Jews don't need converting, and Jews are the elder brother, so they're actually better than us, and they don't actually need anything. And that's pretty much what Vatican II was saying, as well as getting rid of all the traditions. But the Jews remember this. That the Jews know that Christianity is their enemy. This is why they worked so hard to get rid of Christianity, and they know that the Catholic Church was specifically their enemy. I mean, I've heard them before saying fascism was Catholic, fascism was Christian, and yet you hear people today that are supposedly anti-Jewish that are anti-Christian. This is the thing. Well,
if you get back to that speech by the Catholic nun, you know, it's all that same intensity of what Christianity was in World War II. You understand now why I used her.
Well, yeah, the whole series has shown that the Christianity of 70 years ago is completely different to what we're told is Christianity today. And people see it today and they think, oh, it's always been that way. And I hope that, you know, people will see this series and realize that things were different. There's been a big change in the last 70 years.
Well, the guy from Hungary in the interview, what I have up on YouTube, he recognises, even though, you know, he's joined the EU, his country's joined the EU, you know, he still recognises the Christian culture is European and doesn't want any migrants to mess it up. And he's not particularly right-wing. You can't be right-wing if you're joining the EU. Do you understand what I'm saying? But he's still got enough about him to say, look, you know, this isn't right. We're a European culture. Christianity is a main player. And, you know, it's not going to happen. And they've been fined, I think, by the EU. And so I think Poland's been fined as well because they want all Europe race mixed.
Yeah, some people really think Orban's fantastic. And I know of Hungarians that say that he isn't really that good. But compared to the rest of Europe, he's amazing. Moving back to the episode, next it goes to Britain. And
you love this episode, don't you? I can tell.
Yeah. The British authorities start promising Tito, because Tito's now come in and taken over Yugoslavia, and Britain promises Tito that she's going to hand over Pavlic, who was the head of the government that the National Socialists put in, and also all the Ustasha, going to hand them over to the Soviets.
Up to a point. I mean, I worked out something like, I found the documents in Anna Fittler, the Greystone Never Told, that when they all went to Austria to surrender to the West, the British, there was, I think it was 100,000 maybe it could be even 200,000, but we'll say it's 100,000, Ustasha soldiers who handed over the weapons and surrendered. But they had camp followers, which in other terms is they had the families with them because they didn't want to leave them behind in a communist country run by Tito. And so if you work out, you know, there's a, say four people to a family of even two, you know, you're knocking on quite a few hundred thousand. And all these were sent back, to be killed. And, when you think Croatia's only a 4 million population, then that's a fair whack. But, you know, some did manage to get out, as we'll explain a little bit later on. But yeah, that's not a surprise. And it's not just, down in the Balkans. There was, Even American and British troops were left in Russia, but because they were white, I think it was about 25,000 of them, they were sent to the gulags.
Well, was this deal to send them back to Tito, was that not known? Was that a secret thing? Did Britain say that secretly to Tito?
No. What they said, I think, at Potsdam was with Stalin, because at that point Tito was handing out with Stalin. It changed a little bit later on, but, you know, it was that all war criminals should be sent back. Now, when you say all war criminals, you're probably thinking about an handful. No, they're talking about every single one, even the Cossacks. 40,000 of them were sent back by the British. They beat them over the edge with baseball bats onto trains. Then they sent back the Croats. They said the trains were going to go to Italy. They lied again. I don't think the greatest story ever told. They've got the confessions of the generals out there, the people in charge. So there's no denying it. They were sending these back to be killed, just like they killed in Eisenhower death camps. You know, the German soldiers, just like the 15 million Germans what died after World War II, which was more than what died in World War II because of this Jewish campaign, the Morgenthau Plan. To wipe out the white race and the Christians.
So the Croatians, they've been given their independence for the first time in 900 years. They've got their independence. And what they do with their independence is they try to protect the rest of Europe from being invaded by the Soviets. And they go and fight on the Eastern Front. And they join up with the Waffen-SS. And they're fighting against the Soviets. And then when Germany loses the war, they get handed over to the Soviets.
Well, the thing is that when they went into the Soviet Union, there was most of the other divisions, like Romania and a couple of those, were placed on the outside. The only troops to go in with the Germans into central Stalingrad were the Croats because of the fighting capabilities. And again, you see this diehard Christian Catholic culture of theirs, they'll go over a wall against the Bolshevik, you know what I mean? So the Germans admired all that and you know, used them to the best of their ability. But they suffered after the war, and they're probably still suffering today.
Were they fighting against the Allies, or were they just fighting against the Soviets, do you know?
No, fighting against the Allies, because the Allies were the masters of communism. I mean, you know, like I said, after the Bolshevik Revolution, I do believe the bankers owned Russia. And because Roosevelt couldn't get his population to agree to a war to help Britain, I believe they give a phone call to Stalin and said, mash your troops on the border and invade Europe. And you know what the consequences of that would have been if Hitler hadn't preempted it, because Europe just wasn't ready for a Bolshevik invasion of such a size.
Sorry, I phrased that question wrong, really. Oh, I mean, I was referring to, like, the Lithuanians, when they joined up with the Waffen-SS. And when it got to the Nuremberg trials, it was said that they weren't involved. They couldn't be prosecuted because even though they had joined up for the SS, they'd then gone on to only fight on the Eastern Front. And they were fighting to protect their country.
I guess that's true. And that's only because there were no British on the Eastern Front or Americans.
So I was wondering, you know, whether that should have applied to the Ustasha as well, or whether they were just, because, I mean, they were fighting to protect their country from being taken over by the Soviets, weren't they?
Which is all of Christian Europe was. This is the thing. And yeah, you're right. I mean, eventually there were British troops down there. I'm sure they fought against them at some point. But yeah, the main threat at that time was Bolshevism.
This is what everyone was fighting against, was this atheistic Bolshevism. This is why you even had Muslims that were getting involved. Everyone just wanted to try and save So Europe, I mean, we owe these men a massive debt living in Western Europe that Stalin didn't succeed and that Hitler preempted him. Operation yes. Barbarossa. A massive debt we owe them. And look
yeah,
at
it just shows me what's in the minds of the Jewish bankers when they're quite prepared to let Stalin loose on a Europe totally unprepared. Because you've got to remember that time, after the French and the British had been backed off from Europe, or France had been conquered and Britain backed off, Europe was in a bit of a state. You know, there were a lot of governments changing hands, and because obviously, you know, the Rothschilds were facing a problem. So in that kind of a state of chaos, and Stalin walks in with the biggest army anyone's ever seen, you know, the rape and pillaging is frightening.
It seems to me the British have said, you either have a quisling government from us, we'll carry out a coup and put our puppets in power, or we're going to hand you over to the Soviets. And the Germans gave them independence. They gave them a third way out. You don't have to be subservient to the British, and you don't have to be invaded by the Soviets. We'll help you out and give you independence. But it seems to me as if Britain was trying to punish Croatia by allowing that to happen, by like giving them back to Tito and saying to Tito, we'll leave you in charge of Yugoslavia. Like they were punishing them, I think. Don't you think?
Oh, we have to doubt, but I think it was pre-planned at Potsdam when Roosevelt and Churchill agreed. I mean, when they say, if you look at them countries, I can't remember which ones they are now, but I know what go across Europe as a Catholic blockade, Czechoslovakia, Poland, and a couple of others down there, all those countries were handed over to Stalin.
And don't forget, the war supposedly happened because Germany had invaded Poland.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Freeing Poland from
yeah,
Germany.
But that actual Catholic blockade was made to suffer. Hungary was another one. They suffered badly as well.
Massively.
But that's the problem with losing the war.
Massively. Well, then you get near the end and we start getting some good news now and we start hearing about the way that the church hid all these people. Pavlich, he eventually finds sanctuary in the Vatican. Argentina's Perón, he also took 30,000 Nastasia Croats through the Vatican Underground Railroad. Do you know what eventually happened to Pavlich after he found sanctuary in the Vatican? What happened to him?
I think they sent out, I can't be 100% sure about this, but I think they sent an assassin or assassins out to try and kill him. I think they did shoot him, but he was with somebody else. I'm not sure whether this could have been another person, but I think they did shoot him and he died from his wounds at some point, but he was never actually taken back and put on trial.
He also, I think he escaped with wearing priest's clothes, and obviously it had help from the church as well to get out from wherever
yeah,
he was.
Yeah, this church, which is supposed to hate National Socialism.
Well, it's quite clear that they carried on helping after the war, didn't they? The Catholic Church did.
Yeah, I've also said that many times because the Germans through Spain and then from Spain down to South America. That was the way to go because these communist purges, in a war of ideology, you know, the winner will wipe out as many communists in this case and Jews will wipe out as many National Socialists as they can. Hence the trials of these 97-year-old SS and 87-year-old women who deny the Holocaust.
So you've really got the church to thank for the people that did manage to get away, that did actually get away after the war. You know, it's the church that we've got to thank for that, really.
Well, I don't like being called satanic by Catholics who should know better. And like I said, you know, I don't forget that they helped the National Socialists. Now I've just gone and proved it.
Well, you definitely proved it with this episode. If you hadn't before with all the rest, but do you know any more about the rescuing of them after the war? Were there any other important figures that the church helped to get away to Argentina?
Yeah, Barbie was one. Barbie was taken through the so-called rat lines. Eichmann was another one, but I think Israel actually sent a squad in there, kidnapped him, drugged him, and took him back to Israel to stand on trial. But all these rumours about Hitler being down there is false propaganda. I believe Hitler died in Germany, and I can't go off the FBI and the CIA, whatever they say, because you don't know whether they're telling the truth even the best of times today.
Well, I guess it's one of the advantages of having like a united church, a universal church, a Catholic church, because you've got the church in Germany, you've got the church in Spain, you've got the church in Italy, you've got the church in Argentina, and it's all being managed via the Vatican. So when something like this happens, they were able to rely on their white Christian brothers to give them sanctuary and help them to get away. And if you just had a like the Anglican Church, it's just the Church of England or any of these other Protestant churches. Well, what were the Protestant churches doing? Did any of them help out?
Well, yeah, I mean, Germany, like you said, you know, the Waffen-SS, were half of them were practicing Catholics. The other half would have been practicing Protestants, because that's what Germany was. It was a Christian country, either Protestants or Catholic, more prominent Catholic, I believe. And then when he took the six nations, the six or seven nations into the Soviet Union, they were a mixture of Orthodox Christianity, Protestants, and Catholics. What went into the Soviet Union to take down Bolshevism? Because of this hatred for God, and they were religious. But if you could just imagine, a 10-year-old boy in short pants is coming home from school after being told all this about Hitler being this, that, and the other. And then I'm saying to my father, you know, what's this about Hitler being this bad guy who murdered 6 million Jews and blah, blah, blah. And my dad's looking at me saying, no. this is a great man. This is a Catholic, just like all the other leaders. Like Franco and all those. And he taught me from the age of 10, 12, whatever it was, you know, and I've known all this for so long. So I get so frustrated when I go on the internet and I say, look, it wasn't like that, it was like this. And, you know, and I get called satanic.
Well, I'm sure he'd be very proud of you if he could see you today. He's up there looking down. I'm sure he'd be very proud of you. I was just thinking, you know, what's the good? Okay, half the German country was Lutheran. German Lutheran, but what's the good of the German Lutheran Church once Germany's been taken down? The German Lutheran Church can't help to spirit them across to Argentina. The only way they could get off to Argentina was with the help of the Vatican, because you had the Vatican that was a universal church. Do you see what I mean? Because it had church in Germany and in Italy and in Spain, whereas the German church just had Germany.
Yeah, well, you couldn't go nowhere. But I don't think it was just resigned to Catholics. If you were a National Socialist, then, you know, get on the train. You know, we'll help you. I don't think it mattered whether you were Protestant or Catholic at that time. Just got people out of Europe, because they would have been killed. I mean, you know, Leon de Grelle and all them, they would have been killed, although he made his own way to Spain. But I knew all this. And when somebody's come up to me saying, he killed all them Catholics, he would have had to kill his family. Because all his family and his wife's family were all Catholics.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. You know, the Jews know more about the National Socialism being Christian than we do. You do hear them say it in the interviews. And we do need to understand this part about our history. We should be all of us should be identifying with Christianity, whether we practice it or know very much about it or not. I mean, it is a white religion. And it has been the Jews against Christians for the last 2,000 years. It's no good knocking Christianity. You're just doing the Jews' job when you do that. And we need to be doing the Lord's work, like Adolf Hitler said. I'm doing the Lord's work, he said. First page, Mein Kampf.
I went through some paintings of Hitler, and there were numerous, numerous paintings of churches, cathedrals. And then there was, you know, the Jesus and his mother, and this isn't a pagan. And then I thought to myself, well, hang on a minute, let's have a look. Let's go and see what church of those, because he was a bit of a painter. I couldn't find one church, you know.
I bet he wasn't a very good painter either.
He wasn't a very good leader. You know, I wasn't looking at that. I was just looking at his subjects, not a church in sight. And this is a guy who's claimed to be religious.
Why doesn't that surprise me? Anyway, we've reached the end of the podcast now. When can people hope to see this? Is it going to be out by the end of the week, do you think? By the end of next week?
I don't know. Hopefully. You know, I mean, these things, you know, it's like sometimes it's quicker than others, but hopefully, yeah.
Okay, well, you've all got that to look forward to. Okay, thanks for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners. Oh. for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. So until then, I say goodbye, and I hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
To Radio Aryan.